You're listening to the Clean Comedy Podcast with your host, James Creviston.
Hey, everybody. It's James. Welcome to the Clean Comedy Podcast. Today, we have a comedian that actually is one of the first comedians to inspire me when I started comedy. I found his first album by accident. It was about him being a dad. I was a new dad. It really caught me off guard and really like helped me get through some things and figure out how to be a better dad, because apparently he's good at it. I'm not. And then but he has his ups and downs. That's life. But please welcome the very talented, the very funny, the best. I'm going to say you're the best dad in the world. I don't know if it's true. You're better than me, but the very talented Don Friesen.
All right. I didn't realize we were in a competition.
I'm guessing you have like world's.
Yeah, just because I had you out in the swimsuit portion doesn't mean I'm a better dad overall.
Do you have one of those world's greatest dad mugs somewhere? I'm guessing you do.
I used to have a joke. I don't want to brag or nothing, but I'm the world's greatest dad, and I got all the tats and the t-shirts and the mugs to prove it. So I don't know who else was up for it, but sorry, man, I get it every year.
That's awesome. You are one of the best comedians that I've ever seen perform. I've seen you perform three times. Every time is always amazing. You're just overall awesome. How do you do it? Like, how do you keep that up for all this time?
Wow. I don't know. I think the counterpoint would be my wife or my recently ex-wife. So I love that you're saying how awesome I am, because that balances it all out. You're like, okay, so between you two, let's settle in the middle somewhere. I love being a dad. I always have. Is that the thrust of your podcast? Is that a lot of it? Or is it about being a dad?
No, not really. I mean, I talk about being a dad because that's what I do. That's what I am. That's what a lot of my stand-up has turned into as I've grown. And being married and that kind of stuff. So it's very similar to what you do, because I'm not going to lie, you were a big inspiration for when I would hear your stuff and I was like, oh my gosh, this is what's going to be like to be a dad. I'm going to have to like hide things from my wife and play video games with my kids and like do like all these things. I was like, this is great. I can't wait to be a dad, you know? And a lot of that is true. Like my daughters though, and I watch like WWF together, WWE together. And so it's one of those things. And when my oldest daughter was younger, we would watch UFC together and we would have UFC fighters at my house. So a lot of what you went through and what you talk about in your stand-up, I experienced it. I was like, oh my gosh, this is great, you know. So
funny. Well, I'm glad you can relate to it. I've always loved being a dad. I mean, I always dreaded the day when they would move out, but I guess that's not coming. I guess I was dreading for nothing, because they're not going anywhere anytime soon.
That's good though, because it's going to give you more material, right? Because all of your material that I've ever seen is everyday problems and then family issues within those everyday problems. You know, you're losing your password, trying to forgetting to take out the trash when your wife told you to do, like all these kind of things. It's just that stuff that we all deal with. And is that when you start a stand-up, is that where you want to start, is those everyday issues type things? Or like, what do you start with?
No, I just, once I kind of figured out who I was, on stage, then I kind of gravitated towards just satirizing my life, if you will.
Okay.
Just showing when Modern Family came out, I was like, well, that's my life right there. Kind of, you know, I mean, their sense of humor was very much like mine, and the Phil Dunphy character, I'm like, oh my God, there's never been a character on TV who's been more me. Right. Than that guy, you know. So so I just kind of gravitated towards the stuff that I find funny every day. I just write it down and then I try it out, and people tend to, you know, you always wonder, is that just me, or is it like this is what I'm going through? And then you get out there and you tell it, and it's the stuff, you know, it's basic stuff, but in from the angles that you never hear. And then you put it out there and you realize, wow, a lot of people are going through this and feeling the same way, and they just haven't articulated it. So
yeah, no, that's exactly right. I mean, like I said, that's why your comedy spoke to me, because I was like, oh, he gets, like, he's gone through this stuff, and now it's not only funny, but it's almost like semi-advice of like, this is what I did wrong, so don't do that.
Yeah. Learn from my mistakes.
Yeah.
That's so
what are you now? I know you won the was the San Francisco Comedy Fest twice in a row, back to back. Like, how did you do that? Because that's amazing.
Well, it wasn't back to back. A lot of people think that, but it, I won it. I came back a couple years later and did it.
Okay.
But it was one of those it's a month long competition. So it's like if you keep advancing, it takes 3 out of 4 full weeks out of your life. So I wasn't ever planning on coming back, and the guy who books the competition had a fallout about 4 or 5 years after I had won it, and asked me if I had any recommendations. And I went through, I had a couple of good ones, I thought, but it was too last minute and nobody was available. And then I thought, well, hey, you know, I'm actually open. I had just pegged out a couple of, I had pegged out 2 weeks, just earmarked them for doing showcase sets.
Right.
Which I rarely do. I'm not very good at short sets. I always, you know, do the longer, like long form. And I had lined up a couple of things in LA, but they were not so great. You know, they were like mediocre, and they were one day on, one day off. And then I was like, well, if I did the competition and just treat it like a chance to work on my showcase, then I would have I wouldn't have to even worry about where I was going. There'd be a great set lined up for me every night, and I could do this for 1 week or 2 weeks if I advance. And so I was like, well, if, you know, there's no rules about going back after winning, I'll just do it. He said, sure. So so I went back and I started doing my set, and rather than before when I did it, I was just a ball of nerves and trying to like, what do the judges want? What do the crowds want? How do I fit in? I was just like, I was just so loose. I was like, I'm not planning on going anywhere in this competition. I just want to do my short set. And I think maybe it was just the fact that I wasn't stressed, made me loosen up, or maybe the set was just like really good, ready, you know, but, I just kept winning like every night. That never happened in the other competition. It was always a dogfight. And this one, it was like seemingly easy. So I don't know. I think the lack of stress is what worked for me, but, I kept going, and then I ended up getting to the finals, and, I was supposed to be on a cruise ship, and I called up my agents and said, you know, I hate to cancel a cruise, especially on short notice, but I got a chance to win this San Francisco. I like my chances here. Nobody's ever won it twice. You know, can I get out of this week? And so they were, you know, they were reluctantly, I'd never canceled on them before. So they were like, okay, we'll figure it. We'll sort it out with the cruise company. So nice. I went back and did it and won. It was the weirdest thing.
That's awesome. That's the thing, is you are very relaxed on stage. Every time I've seen you, it's like a lot of comedians, especially, well, I'll go from my personal experience. I am stressed to the moment I get on stage. So when I get on stage, I get the first laugh, then I kind of relax. But you seem relaxed the whole time. Like nothing's going to bother you. Like you're like, yeah, it's all good. We're here to have fun. Who cares? You know, everything. And I'm like, how do you do that?
Alcohol. you know, I used to be a ball of nerves. I was very I had stage fright and I was stressed out, but I think just like, you know, it's the Malcolm Gladwell thing of doing it 10,000 times, and I think I was so, it was such a problem for me that I focused on like, how do I, you know, just relax, just don't worry if the first, I'm not even a good opening comedian. Like I don't have a solid opening joke. I couldn't tell you right now what my opening, I do something different every night. If I had one, I would use it, but I have never been able to come up with one that lasts for very long, you know?
Right.
And so I don't come out strong usually. So the way I compensate for that is, I just know that I have a strong act and they're going to catch up to me. And they'll like me once they get to, you know, so even if it, so I don't put the pressure myself to get big laughs in the beginning. Sometimes it does happen just organically. They love everything you say right from the get-go. But sometimes I'll just, you know, almost eat it for a minute or two. But if you're not expecting the laughs, if you know that they're going to come and you have confidence and you're just relaxed anyways, then they come to you, you know, if you have the right material.
I never thought about that. Like, cause I've been so focused on, like, you know, you hear the thing, like, you got to get a laugh in the first 30 seconds type thing. And so, like, that part automatically stresses me out, where if that happens, I am like, oh my gosh. And I even have an opening joke that's really good that always gets laughs, but the lead into it, like the first half of the joke, is a good minute or so of setting up everything to get the big punchlines at the end. And I've had bookers and other people say, you need to cut that joke, it's too long, you're not getting a laugh right away. But it's the like, it always hits, it always explodes, it always gets good laughs. They hate it. Bookers hate it. People love it. It's so weird.
Well, that is a long time to get your first laugh.
I'd say it's about a minute, maybe less, but somewhere in that range.
Yeah. Well, if you're going to wait that long to get your first laugh, then you have to figure out how to just own it and be confident.
Yeah.
Leading up to it.
Yeah. I guess that's what makes me not confident about it, is because so many bookers have said, well, there's a small laugh in the beginning, and then like there's like that little gap of like no laughter, because it's a big setup. I have to set up like this commercial. I have to tell you what the commercial is, so you understand when I parody that commercial, why it's funny, right? And they're like, if I don't do it that way, I've tried it several different ways. If I don't do it that way, it utterly bombs. Like it terribly bombs, and people don't like only bookers hate it. Other people, they don't mind. It's so weird. Bookers are competitions.
You sure make your life easier if you have a good open joke or a good laugh. You know, I don't do this on purpose. I just realized that, you know, I'm not, the worst thing I think is to like push for a laugh or expect a big laugh on, or, you know, I think you have to know how funny what you're saying is potentially. And if you think you're going to get a good laugh on something and you present it like that and it's just mediocre, then it comes off weird.
Right.
But if you go up there and are just kind of easing your way in and have that kind of like, I'm not expecting a laugh, but I'm just talking, I'm establishing my character.
Right.
Then if you're interesting enough to just get through the bridge, they'll come to you. But then I have a couple big laughs that come in the first couple minutes, you know,
but
just not right off the bat.
Yeah.
So what is whatever is funny about the moment or the day or whatever, or the room or whatever I feel like, you know, I just be spontaneous and real in the beginning, work my way to the first laugh.
I like that. What is your writing process, your joke development process? Is it, do you set aside time every day to write jokes? Do you, you know, do it once a week? Or do you just work it out on stage? What's your process?
I actually, all day long, and night, if I'm in bed at night or in the morning, or if I wake up and I think of something, I always either jot down a note, or it's usually a recorder. Right. I'll record my thoughts. And then I try and write every day, but it doesn't work out every day. And then 4 or 5 days a week, I write. I write the most when I know I have a show coming up that night, or I just came back from a show. And so my best writing comes on show days or the day after. And I just sit down a lot of times alone. A lot of times with another writing partner, I'll meet with other comics, and we'll just say, you know, we block out a couple hours and say, what are you working on? And I'll go through and I'll look at all my notes, and I'll look at what I was working on last. I'll go through my recorder. I'll play a clip where I did something new from a recent set, because I always auto tape my sets.
Right.
Yeah, I would. That's the one. Gold, you know, recommendation. If I could only recommend one thing to everybody in comedy, is audio tape every single set.
Yeah.
Listen, you know, if you're doing an hour, you don't have to listen to the hour, but you listen to the three parts that you were working on, those little 3 minute sections or whatever.
Yeah.
It's just basically capturing it when I think of it, or when I'm in conversation with somebody, I'll say, I might be on a podcast. You might ask me a question that I answer in a way that, like, wow, I can reuse that. So I'll just jot it down. And yeah, because it's never like sitting down and writing and like, okay, let's think of things, you know. That's like trying to come up with a topic for your research paper. It's like, good luck.
Yeah.
But if you have already a bunch of undeveloped ideas that you've thought of throughout the day, then it helps to just like, you know, expound on those and bounce them off somebody else.
I like that. That's the thing is I find myself, I'll start to fall asleep a little bit and then I'll be like, oh my gosh. And I have to wake up and like write something down or record something right. into my phone or whatever. And I'm like, man. Right. And then the next day I look at it. Sometimes I'm like, what does that even mean? Or whatever. Yeah.
Sometimes you get the best and the worst ideas in bed, you know, just like.
And then do you, when you put it together to like make a special or whatever, like your dry bar special, when you put that together or something, do you go and try to find a theme? Do you try to stay like within topics or you try to connect topics? Like what's your way of setting up a bigger, longer set like that?
It kind of grows organically throughout the development of the hour. Okay. You just find that things work, you know. There's rules of thumb that some comics swear by, and they're actually good rules of thumb, but they don't always work for all my material. One comic told me once, I forget who it was, but he was way ahead of me on the curve, well-respected headliner, great set. He was always, you know, work from least intimate to most intimate.
Wow.
And that's that's a good way to do it, you know. But it didn't work for me with that particular set, but I still kept it. And like, you know, for me, I've always had a bad memory. So it's kind of steered me towards a style of writing where I take a couple topics and I just milk them to death. So the bit just grows and grows. And I can remember this because it's after this and it's after this and they're all about this. And then, yeah. And then every couple months or so I'll reorganize a bit, or I'll take a bit that's already working and it's 3 minutes long, and I'll add 2 minutes and take away another minute, and I'll shift some things around in it. And then I'll realize that there's callback potential in another bit. So I have to either set it up earlier or I have to change the order of that bit. And so by the end of the day, it's like a big puzzle that I've deconstructed so many times, but hopefully at the end it has kind of a theme. Like the longer I do this, the more I'm able to like, you know, step back one more step and see the act and make it more thematic.
Yeah, that makes sense. I like that. Is there and how do you organize? Do you use like a Word document? Do you like notes or something? Like how do you, what's your process for that kind of stuff? Or do you handwrite stuff?
I actually, hold on, I have it right here.
Oh, nice. You all are going to learn from the master today.
Well, actually, well, this is a set list that I don't know if you can see that. Okay.
Oh yeah. Oh wow.
I use the Apple Pencil and I have different colors, and then I'll do. These are like notes of things that I'm working on.
Wow. You handwrite all your stuff in there and it's digitally there.
Yeah. Yeah. It's, wow. I just started doing this. Karen Rontowski, I don't know if you know her. She turned me on to we were working together and she was working on her iPad. And like, that looks like what I want to do because
I lose my.
Oh, I lost you there for some reason.
Oh,
there you are. Good.
Okay. So if I type, I lose my flow.
Right. Okay.
I can't talk fast enough. And I'm thinking about words more than if I write for some reason. And I'm thinking about words that I lose my, you know, sometimes if I even write, it's, you know, the record is the best because you get it instantly, because sometimes you get flashes of brilliance, but they're fleeting. And then when you remember it, you get the almost same thing, which is just funny or, you know, a little more than funny, but it's not brilliant. But like moments that are like lightning in a bottle, you know. Yeah. And you can lose them so quickly and think that you have the gist of it, but you've lost the special part of it that was like this. So I'm an advocate, at least for myself, of writing and recording.
I'm gonna have to try the writing one. I do record and then I listen to it and then I'll write it all down or I'll upload it so it gets dictated, then I'll listen to it and work on it again. And I keep it all, you know, in like a Word document and stuff like that. And I do it for and I keep everything by year that I wrote it. So I'll have like, I think I have stuff going back to like 2015, 2016, something like that, 2014. I don't know.
Yeah. Well, and I'm a scribbler, so I have notebooks, and I could never go back and the things don't. So with the iPad, I can now like copy and paste and put things. I can cut them down and put them together where they belong. And you know, it's still new, so it might end up still being this massive nightmare I can't handle. But so far, it's more manageable than paper.
That's awesome, man. That's so good to know. It's so good to know that you still develop these things. It still has to come from, you know, a small idea or a kernel of a thought or a funny situation, and then you have to just expand, you know.
You know, your best bits typically, or at least for me, come from editing, just from constantly rewriting a million different ways, trying five different versions of three different versions of a joke, you know what I mean? And the only way you really nail it is when you listen to your recorded set and then it comes to you like, oh, why didn't I say it like this? This is what I should have said. Yeah. And your hit rate on something that you insert into something that you listen, that you just perform for a crowd, is so much higher because it becomes clear like where this goes and how the rhythm is going. Whereas if you're writing in a bubble that you haven't presented to anyone, you're very creative, but you're not getting the beats are like really hit and miss.
Yeah. Yeah. I noticed my first version of anything that I write, when I say it out loud the first time, feels clunky and awkward and not there. The idea is there and there are nuggets, but it's, you're like, people go, whoa, okay, there's something there, but man, you got to really fix X, Y, and Z. You're driving a hoopty right now. You're running into everything and you're driving. It's great. You're driving, you're on the road, but you're also hitting a lot of stuff and you're not going to go where you want to go, you know? So
right.
It's one of those things. What is the single, besides recording stuff, if you could go back in time and give yourself like the single biggest piece of advice to advance your career, to like set yourself up for a better, you know, comedy career, what would that be?
Oh, wow. I don't, you know, I, if I knew it, I'd probably be further along. I still think my strongest advice I already gave, which is always record your sets,
right?
And do a lot of, you know, get stage time. Stage time is the key. Constant stage time. Always keep editing. I'm trying to think of what. Yeah, there's not a single thing. And you always, a lot of things that work for me, I don't know if they would work for other people or not, to the degree they work, you know, because everybody's delivery and their comedy and their process, you know, if you talk to 10 comics, you'll get 9 different processes.
Right.
You know, so yeah, but I was, you know, write a lot, edit a lot, always record your sets.
That's awesome. Well, I really appreciate your time. I know that all the listeners are going to appreciate your time. I'm grateful. I've been like a super fan for a while, so I'm glad I got the fanboy now a little bit today.
Yeah. Are you going to be out and around now that we're back out there? I'm at Flappers at the end of next, about 4 weeks from now.
Yeah, so I'll probably be out there. I did see that you're going to be in at Flappers in the end of April.
We'll see.
Yeah, uh-huh. I'll try. Yeah, no, I'm going to try to come out. I know I've been working on stuff. I am working on stuff because I also want to go do dry bar. And so I have the opportunity, but I'm getting a set built and stuff. And I want it to be thematic. Like I'm doing a whole themed kind of set. And
it's hard. It's hard to do because when you write things, you write what inspires you and you don't know how it connects to everything else. I mean, now, conversely, there are people like, you know, Chris Titus, but he's, you know, he's like a savant almost. I mean, he can just write and have a theme and like flows out as a theme, but very few comics can do that. You know, it's, making a theme is kind of a higher level for me, I think, is a higher level form of the art.
It's been hard. I've had to like take stuff that I know works.
Learn to do that, but yeah.
I've taken stuff that I know works and then had to set it aside and go, okay, not for this, not for this. I'm not going to do it for this. I know it works. I have a good 20 minutes of great material, but it's like, not for this. It doesn't flow the way I want it to. It's great for a set. People love it. It works, but it's not what I want to put out right now. And I know it could use some finesse, but I want to build this theme that I've had all these jokes that I've written, never put together. And I've like building it and it's beautiful. And yeah, I've been watching you. I have been watching Christopher Titus. Yeah.
You know what though? You just gave yourself the advice that I mean, I don't watch comics. Years ago, I stopped watching comics for inspiration or like to learn what they're doing. Just because I didn't want to, I've kind of figured out what works for me. I mean, I always, if I see something and it's obvious, like, well, I could do some more of that. That would improve my act. But early on, though, I studied every comic I could get my hands on just to figure out. And I tried a bunch of different styles out. And I tried to see, like, what is it? How are they getting their laughs? You know, how are they moving on the stage? How are they, you know, it's just every aspect I could break down of their process that I could see what was in common with the comedians that I liked. And was I doing some form of that? So it was basically teaching yourself through just breaking down. And that's very helpful. Again, very early on, not so much later on, because once you have your own kind of like style, then, you know, you don't even look to be that influenced by other people. At least I don't think. I just trying to do what you do best. And if you pick a little nugget up now and then, they'll spin you in the right direction. All the better.
Yeah. It's you, Tom Papa, and Christopher Titus.
Tom Papa is so funny.
Yeah.
I didn't even know him for years. And I mean, I don't even know him, but
right.
I know Chris, but I didn't even know of him. He'd been doing it a long time. And I saw him the first time. I'm like, where'd this guy come from? This guy's cool. Yeah. And Titus, I've known forever, but yeah, great comics. Well, I'm happy to be in that company.
Yeah, totally. And Titus is like one of my favorites. Where I'm like, man, I feel stupid as I listen. I'm like, how did you do this? You're telling a great story, and it's so funny, and it's so it gets you and like really touches you at the same time while you're laughing. It's I love and hate it at the same time, because I feel like I said, I feel stupid watching it. Like, how are you doing this? It's just like watching a magic trick that you're trying to figure out over and over again.
Yeah.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for your time. Where can people find you? Where can they find out more about you and where you're going to be at?
They can find me on my website. The easiest way to get there is just funnydon.com.
Okay.
Or donfriesen.com will take you to the same place.
Perfect.
Got a couple things locally coming up in the next month. I'm at the, when does this air?
This will air at the beginning of April. So it'll be Ogden, Utah, Wise Guys, April 15th, 16th, Sunnyvale, Rooster Teeth Feathers, April 21st through 24th. And then Burbank Flappers.
The remodel is stalled. So that date is no longer valid.
At which one?
Jeez, I think I took it off.
Yeah. Oh, it's on your website.
Oh, it's still on the website?
Yes, sir.
Took it down. It probably won't be till May or June because they're remodeling in it.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Well, then Flappers, and then I know you will also be doing JR's Comedy Club in Simi, because my buddy runs that, that's in April, at the beginning of April as well.
I'm hoping in May or June to tape my next special, but I don't have details yet.
Oh, that would be awesome.
Yeah,
you let me know. I'll be there.
All right. Deal.
I know it's a little like weird to be like a fanboy, but I'm very much so. I was so happy when you came and did the Queen Comedy Hour show at Flappers on our thing. I was like, I can't believe he said yes. I'm so excited, you know. So
Well, thanks.
Thank you so much.
Have fun with your kids. This is the time, man.
Thank you. I appreciate it. Thank you so much. Thank you, everybody, for listening. We'll put all the links for Don's stuff in the show notes. And again, thank you all for listening. Have a great one. Bye.